powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go
now. This hour is brought to you by Mazda of Everett. And Bump, earlier in the show, we were talking about your limit for paying DK Metcalf. Where would you say, no, this number is too much? You settled on like, hey, I wouldn't make him top pay. I wouldn't make him over $30 million. Yeah. Maybe not even $30 million. Mm-hmm. I'd stop at around $27 million, though I'd be willing to go over it.
Yeah.
That was about the average response on the text line. Though some people saying, look, I don't want to pay this guy more than $25 million. We've already seen this team spend big money and make big moves on Jimmy Graham and Percy Harvin, and that didn't work out, which brought me to my point, because this tends to be a theme when we talk about both the Mariners and Seahawks. There are some people that say, look, spending didn't work out. You don't have to do that again. And Bump, I got to say, I don't know about you, but that's one of my biggest pet peeves.
Pet peeves, what, just not spending? Like,
just the idea that, hey, we tried that approach.
Oh, you've already done that.
We've already done that, and it didn't work out. And then you get a little shy when it comes to spending again, because you can see the flaws in the plan for both what the Mariners did and what the Seahawks have done when it comes to big moves.
Aaliyah once said, if at first you don't succeed, dust yourself off and try again.
The late great
Aaliyah. You can't be scared. You cannot be scared, right? This is a gamble. This football, this athletics is all a gamble. You are hoping that your investment works out. I want you to ask your local millionaire how many of his investments just worked out automatically, right?
Yeah.
You're gonna fall sometimes, and you need, like you said earlier, you need a superstar. You need someone who's gonna put butts in the stands. Even if his position is contingent on a lot of things going right, you still need it. And then when it does go right, you look like a genius. Like, how many? I would say DK Metcalf is probably responsible for about half of the big plays that we've seen over the past couple of seasons,
yeah,
right? And I always think about that drive against the Vikings in the 2020 season when the Hawks are down. Two fourth downs, Russell Wilson went to DK Metcalf. One on the sideline, one in the end zone. It's like, who else makes that play? You can say Tyler Lockett, but you know what Lockett was doing? Occupying one or two other guys, so he can make that play. So, yeah, man, you got to pay the man. I know money's tight around here these days, but you got to pay him.
You know what else you never hear people say is, like, all the times it didn't work out when you didn't spend?
Mm-hmm.
Like, look back at the Mariners. You never hear people say, oh, well, they had that $100 million payroll and 100 losses and gross, what a weird, freak, abstract thing to happen. Or, oh, you went and you paid for Robinson Cano, you brought in Nelson Cruz, you did all this stuff, and it didn't work out. Do you know how many times you didn't pay?
Yeah.
How many times you were in the bottom third of the league in payroll and didn't succeed? A lot of times. It's not like you've got examples of like, oh, well, you know, they didn't spend any money. They just, you know, moneyballed their way to success here and it worked out. They got a World Series. No, they've actually never done that before.
Never.
So that whole idea of trying to penny pinch your way to success, yeah, that first of all is not going to work in baseball. And secondly, when it comes to the Seahawks, you got to look at keeping the talent you have. The whole, like, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush kind of thing. You've got a bird in the hand with DK Metcalf. You can look and you can say, oh, I could go get a rookie wide receiver and a draft next year and he could be just as good. Well, what if he's not? What if you use a second rounder, you get another Paul Richardson? Yeah. What if you use a first rounder and you get an LJ Collier who's not a wide receiver, but the point being that you've used high round picks on guys that haven't worked out for you? You have a guy that is working out.
Yeah, go with the guy that's proven. Go with the guy who strikes fear into DBs. Go with the guy who can change the game with one play. Go with the guy who's proven you can count on him late in the games. Go with the guy who showed maximum effort running down Buda Baker and saving a touchdown. Like, he's done so much for this team already in his short time here is that he deserves this. It's not like he's some Joe Schmo who hasn't done much. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy has been a staple here. He's helped you win a lot of ball games, and this is just the going price for receivers. Deal with it. This is how much you have to pay for an elite receiver, and that's exactly what he is.
From Chris in the 206, hey now, Paul Richardson was good. Paul Richardson was good for you, but he was a wide receiver number three, and he was your first pick in that draft.
Mm-hmm.
He was a second rounder. I think he was 41 overall around there. But either way, I mean, he was still your wide receiver number three, and even though he was good, he was never truly better than that because you had Jimmy Graham who you brought in, Doug Baldwin who you brought in. Speaking of Jimmy Graham, this is another example. I've seen this all the time, Bump. Hey, they went and they made a big trade for Jimmy Graham. They made a big trade for Percy Harvin and they paid Harvin. Like, what? Why would you do that again? Those were two big mistakes. How about doing it another way? Well, Bump, what do those two guys have in common? They didn't really, particularly Graham, fit what the team was trying to do.
And Jimmy Graham wasn't bad.
No! He
still had 10 red zone touchdowns.
You're going to fit in perfect around here.
Welcome, Bump. Welcome.
He wasn't bad. And you can say what you want about Percy Harvin, right? Wasn't available a lot, but he made some big plays. But Jimmy Graham, like, he wasn't the tight end that this team needed, but he still made some plays.
Jimmy Graham gets the weirdest bad rap here in Seattle. I think he had an unwilling, he did not want to talk to media. He mm-hmm. was not tight with media. He did not love doing interviews. It was not being rude. He would just avoid reporters. Like, I was in the locker room. Like, he wouldn't be like, don't talk to me. And he would.
No eye contact.
Like, it clearly made him uncomfortable. He didn't like doing it. All right. Sure, I won't fault you for it. He did it when he had to. Like, when he was pulled on stage to be like, this is your podium time, this is whatever you have to do, he would do it. He gets the weirdest rap for not talking to media and not having that relationship where you become a fan favorite. But then also people thinking like, oh, he's not tough because he wasn't blocking. I'm sorry. Was he an elite blocker with the Saints? If I'm John Schneider, I'm looking back at the Jimmy Graham trade saying, I did my part. I got you an elite red zone target. Don't look at me wondering what I was doing.
It's personality. Some people don't like talking to the media. It makes them uncomfortable. And then as far as bringing Jimmy Graham over here and expecting him to put his hand in the dirt and take on DNs and block, that's not what he did in New Orleans. No, spread him out, throw the football. So you knew what you were getting, but you tried to force him into doing something he wasn't comfortable doing. So whose fault is that, really? In the end of the day, he wasn't that bad.
Two questions for you, Bump, from the Mac and Jack's text line. I'll start with this one. What are the odds? Sorry, from the 425, how would DK's contract, so whatever money you might assume, let's mm-hmm. assume it's a big top five contract, how would DK's contract affect Tyler Lockett down the road contract-wise?
It would affect him. I mean, it's a numbers game, right?
Yeah.
Forget, and that's what people forget. It's not a feelings game. It's not, I feel he should get this. It's, okay, what is the going rate? And then how does that affect everyone else going around him? Obviously, if you pay DK a huge contract, it affects how much Lockett is going to get. And then everything else that's happened affects what Lockett is going to get. It's not just DK. DK is like the big name with the big number, but there's also several other guys who are going to get paid as well. So how does it affect him? I can't tell you exactly how it's going to affect him, but there's going to be effect. If DK took less money, everyone else took less money, you could pay Lockett more. It's really black and white. Like, people make it so complicated.
I'm looking up Tyler Lockett's contract. I don't know off the top of my head when that expires. Another thing, though, is their age difference. You always want to have both guys here. So Lockett's under contract through 2025. There's an out after 2023. His cap hit in 24 and 25 is going to be $23 million. So you would be paying your two top wide receivers a lot of money. But then you wonder, like, well, how effective is Tyler without DK? How effective is DK without Tyler?
Tyler's always had someone to lean on. DK has always had someone to lean on.
Yeah.
And that's what you need in the pass game especially. That's what Noah Fant's going to do. Noah Fant's going to help these guys out too because he's going to be big in the pass game as well. It's all about opening guys up, and you can't just have one guy out there and expect him just to carry the team like that. I mean, I guess it's been done before if you're one of the all-time greats, but life is easier for the quarterback and for a receiver when you have options running around out there.
All right. Another question coming in. Bump. We're not going to hold you to these numbers. You can give out like an average per year that you're kind of thinking.
Okay.
But this listener from the 360 says, okay, Bump, tell us what your contract would look like.
All right. 4 years, $25 million.
The A.J. Brown
deal? A.J. Brown contract.
A.J. Brown
That's
contract.
That's it.
Do you think that comparing A.J. Brown and DK, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Is there an argument DK could make to say I'm worth more?
Of course there is. I think A.J. Brown and DK are very similar receivers. They're both big. They can get down the field, and they are violent football players. But when you're so close in comparison, you're going to have an argument. Now it's all beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? Now, how do the Seahawks view you and A.J.? Do they see you guys as similar? Does A.J. do one thing better than you? I mean, it's all perspective. It's all what you prefer in a receiver and what he brings to the table. But the thing that DK has on AJ is that I've been here. You know me. We're comfortable with each other. You know what I'm saying? And relationships are huge, especially when it comes to negotiating contracts.
Well, and that's the other thing I think people would point to and say, well, it'd be easy if Russ was there because DK could say, mm-hmm. yeah, I can get you 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
I can get you 10 touchdowns. I can get you, you know, 1,000 yards. I've done it before with this guy.
Yeah.
What's the offense going to look like with Drew? What's it going to look like with Geno?
Yeah, I think with DK, if he's paired up with Drew or Geno, it's all about the explosive plays and him in the red zone. Because even though he only had, what, 900 yards last year, mm-hmm. only 900 yards, like right. everyone just gets 900 right. yards, you mentioned it. He had 12 touchdowns. So you know that, look, he's going to be able to put points on the board. So his production may go down when it comes to targets and receptions. But as long as he's still producing one or two big plays a game and he's effective in the red zone, I think he's going to be worth every single penny.
Spencer in the 206, I do think DK edges out A.J. Brown by a million or two.
Cool. Me too.
Great. Same. Craig says just pay DK as much in crypto as he wants. All
oh, he's smarter than that.
DK's doing that one. Again, I think just the final point I want to leave on is, you know, it applies in different ways to the Mariners and Seahawks. One is working in a league without a salary cap and the other is. One of my biggest pet peeves remains, you spent once and if it doesn't work, don't do it again. The Mariners need to open the pocketbook more often than not.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed they didn't do it more this year. Now, I don't mind the moves they made. I think bringing in Robbie Ray was a great decision. Mm-hmm. And if I were back in time and I were GM, I'd do it 10 out of 10 times. Why not? Cy Young winner, bring him in. That being said, they need to spend more than they have. And that has been an ongoing problem with the organization. And it is such a pet peeve when people say, oh, you did it once, it didn't work out, so try something else. No. Overwhelmingly, teams that spend win. Overwhelmingly. And spending and not winning is not proof against that.
Who can you count on in the majors to be in the running for a World Series championship?
Dodgers.
Money.
Yankees.
Hella money.
Big markets. That spend.
Boom. Red you got to spend it. Come on, baby. Don't be cheap. Come on.
I don't want to hear you say Braves. I don't want to hear anyone say Braves, okay? I'm talking about teams that are regularly in contention. There are plenty of examples. Last year's Giants. First of all, it's not like any of these teams, when we're talking about them, are like 30th. Or 27th. Yeah. These are still teams that are spending typically above league average.
Hey, they're giving themselves a fair chance at success. Don't pinch pennies. Spend that money.
Yeah. Message is a little different for the Seahawks, but in my mind, when it comes to DK, it's got to be spending, giving up picks for Jimmy, spending big on Percy, and those guys not working is not reason to move on from a superstar in my mind.
Nope, not enough. Not enough.
No. All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
Speaking of the Mariners, by the way, I got to remind you guys that in 15 minutes, we're going to be joined by Mariners reliever Ken Giles. First down here, Steph Curry climbs the ladder of all-time greats with his fourth NBA championship. Congrats to Steph. Is there any player in the NFL who could help his legacy this year if he wins a Super Bowl in 2022?
Yes, there is. This player was not considered a Hall of Famer before this season. After winning a Super Bowl, he is in the talks, I believe, and that's Matthew Stafford. He has 49,000 yards. That is 12th all-time, 1,500 yards behind the great John Elway. He has 4,300 completions, 11th all-time. 323 pass touchdowns, 12th all-time. The last team to repeat a Super Bowl was the 03 or 04 Patriots. If he has a great year and is in Super Bowl contention, you got to start looking at this dude as one of the best to play the game. The numbers don't lie. The talent doesn't lie. I think Matthew Stafford, if he can put something together, he's going to climb the ladder. He's not going to be on the Mount Rushmore. He's not Joe Montana, Tom Brady.
He's no Nick Foles.
You know what I'm saying?
There's only one Nick Foles.
Bear down.
Bear down.
But he can move up, man. And it's, I think the game has always respected him. But him winning that Super Bowl puts more respect on his name. If he has a big year, I think we start putting even more respect on his name.
It is interesting that both he and Calvin Johnson, a couple other players with Detroit, were always seen as suffering at the hands of an organization yeah. rather than the cause of losing. I don't think either were the cause of losing, but it is just so interesting how no matter what, the conversations around these two were always, imagine them with another team.
Yeah.
No one doubted their ability.
Yep. And they were with franchises that didn't win much, but you know who was second behind Russell Wilson when it comes to fourth quarter comeback since, like, what, 2012 or something like that?
Yeah.
It's Matthew Stafford.
Second down. Speaking of wide receivers, Bump, Tyler Lockett made the NFL's most underappreciated list. We obviously love him here in Seattle, but why does the national fan base overlook him as one of the best receivers in all of football?
The same reason why they get on DK, because he's not a diva, right? He doesn't seek that type of attention. Now, I don't think DK seeks that attention, but that's just his personality. Lockett is low-key, man. He's a real estate agent. He does poetry. He's big in the community. Let me remind you, the national media, because I'm sure everyone across the country listens to our show from 10 to 2 every day.
1,000%, yeah.
That's three consecutive.
Tyler Lockett's listening right now.
Tyler, right now. This is for you, baby.
What's up, Tyler?
Number 16. I wore 16, too, back in the day, Tyler, but not like you, my guy. Three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons, 36 touchdowns the last four seasons, over 3,000 receiving yards the last three seasons. That's six amongst active players, 255 receptions last three seasons, seventh amongst active players. Again, put some more respect on this dude's name. I think it's his personality. It's the marketability. Like, locally,
yeah. You
know Tyler Lockett when you see him. Nationally, he might just look like a regular 5'10 guy walking down the street with a hoodie on. You know what I'm saying? So I think that is why the national media or fan base doesn't appreciate him. The guys who do football for real, who analyze this game and really watch this game, understand how important Tyler Lockett is.
When I imagine DK Metcalf, I imagine him doing podcast interviews with celebrities.
Yeah.
In my mind, when I close my eyes and think, what's Tyler Lockett doing now? It's like he's at Safeway. You know what I mean? Like, he's at Target. He's just running some errands. And it's like this very low-key, very normal guy. But there is, you're right. There is an aspect of, like, superstardom that doesn't follow people who don't, who just kind of live more normal lives. They're just very low-key.
People don't like regular folk to be superstars. And Tyler is a superstar, especially here. So I'm glad the NFL.com put out that article.
Third down. Are there any positions that need to be addressed outside of quarterback for the Seahawks in 2023?
Outside of the QB. So this draft, the O-line was addressed. The D-line was addressed. The secondary was addressed. The backfield, when we talked to running backs, were addressed. Wide receivers were addressed. You didn't have to touch the linebacker core because Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton and Darryl Taylor and Chenna, they're going to get that thing done. So I'm going to say no. No, they've done everything they need to do this offseason so far. Oh, and let's not forget they brought in Noah Fant, a tight end who I think is going to have a great year. Now, you can go out and say, well, they didn't make a big splash. Okay, we're just talking about positions that needed to be addressed. I think this is the first time I've been covering the Hawks for 5 or 6 years now. The first time I looked at this draft and what they've done, I'm like, dang, man, like, they've done everything they need to do except the quarterback spot. That's a different story. But surrounding him with talent, whoever that quarterback is, I think the Hawks have done exactly that.
And the quarterback spot continues to be one of those things where you think, in an ideal world, they draft a guy next year in a richer class
yep. And
find success with him. But that also means struggling because those guys are going to go top 10. A lot of them are going to be gone top 5.
Yeah.
There's going to be a run. So that means having a horrible record, or the Broncos having a horrible record. But it also means that guy working out. And you can think of a ton of examples. Carson Wentz. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Guys that were a number one, number two pick that didn't work out. That Jared Goff, that weren't that guy for their team. And it's why some organizations have gone decades without finding the
answer. I'm going to blow your mind with this, Stacey.
No.
You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Most picks don't work out.
No!
They don't. So just
what do you mean?
Just because you have a top 5, top 10, top 15 pick and you grab the quarterback that you want.
Lies. Does
not mean it's going to work out, folks.
Mitch Trubisky is a star, Bump.
A star.
Take that back. Fourth down. He's an MVP. Which Seahawks coach has the toughest job this year?
All right, so there's a lot of moving parts. You can look at that offensive line. Andy Dickerson has two young tackles who come from an air raid offense. People are questioning that. You got a new center. You're hoping Damian Lewis bounce back. You got Gabe Jackson over there as well, but it's not him. And then you can look at Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, and the new the quarterback coach, Canales. Who's going to be your quarterback? Is it Drew Lock? Is it Geno? Is it Jimmy? Is it Baker? Either way, they got their hands full. But the guy who has his hands full the most, I think, is Carl Scott. Carl Scott is the defensive pass game coordinator. He's going to work with the secondary. He is responsible for revamping the secondary. They gave up 265 pass yards per game. That is second most in the league. Only has 7 interceptions. That's third least in the league. He's got to do something with his secondary. You got young blood out there. You got Kobe Bryant, Trey Brown from last year, Tariq Woolen. You got Burns on the other side. You got Sidney Jones. Like, you got to find the right configuration. You got the OGs, the safety and the free safety in the back. You got Quandre and you got Jamal Adams. But it's like, schematically, what are you going to do to create more chaos in the secondary? And typically, that box helps the secondary. I want the secondary to help the box. Be so sticky on the back end that this defensive line, these linebackers are going to have the time to get after these quarterbacks. So I'm looking at Carl Scott and I'm saying, hey, you got your hands full, but you got some talent to work with.
All right. We're going to wrap up with what I need to know coming up at 45 after. But you guys can send in your questions now. Any question you have for the show, text it now to the Mac and Jack's text line 206-421-3776. Your question's coming up at 145. First, though, we're going to talk with Mariners reliever Ken Giles.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Next offer on the way, and a swing and a miss and a breaking ball in the dirt for strike three. And welcome back, Ken Giles. He strikes out the first batter that he faces in almost two seasons. He fans Sean Murphy. Welcome back, Ken Giles. One away for the A's here in the bottom of the ninth inning.
Mariners reliever Ken Giles returned to baseball nearly two seasons after missing time after Tommy John surgery and a finger injury. And he joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline to talk about his return and this team. Ken, how's it going?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're fantastic. I mean, we're good, but we're especially excited for you. How did it feel to get back out there after missing so much time?
It was super exciting. Quite frankly, I was a nervous wreck out there because I didn't know what to expect of myself. So I'm glad it was just a clean inning. That's all I cared about. And it was just awesome and beyond joy to just be out there with the boys again.
Now, Ken, you are a professional. And just what's it like going out there? You haven't played in a while, but you're in a stadium with nobody watching. Would you prefer there were a bunch of people there, or did you like the environment you were in?
You know what? When it's a big league stadium, it's a big league stadium because that's the highest level you're ever going to be able to play. So just having that mindset and knowing that it's just a big league stadium, like, it changes the whole dynamic of the environment for me.
Love it.
Ken, I got to say, it's like weirdly refreshing to hear a professional athlete say, yeah, I was freaking out. I was a bundle of nerves, because normally you guys are like, and I don't blame them, but being like, yeah, you know, I just wasn't thinking about it. Your answer genuinely surprised me, just being like, yeah, it's not easy. I mean, is that typical of kind of your approach before games, or was it this feeling in particular being like, man, it's been a road?
I mean, it was just a long journey for me. I mean, I'm pretty honest with myself. I mean, when I'm saying I'm a nervous wreck, I was a nervous wreck. I'm pretty honest when I'm feeling out there. And I'm quite frankly, just like I said, I was a nervous wreck because I didn't expect anything. But you know what? I was just happy that I just kind of like trusted my body, and I let my body go in like automatic mode and let it go and just have it enjoy myself. And I didn't care what the outcome was going to be as long as I was out there competing. Doing at the highest level, that's all I cared about.
Can I remember, I broke the fifth metatarsal of my foot. I have a screw in it to this day. It took me so long to trust it, to put my foot in the ground as hard as I can, and to believe that my body was ready to go. What was that process like for you getting back mentally and saying, all right, I'm ready to go, let's get it?
I mean, it was a grind. I mean, I thought I'd never see the light at the end of the tunnel, honestly, because in spring training, I was feeling great. I was having some good outings. I was trusting myself little by little. And then something like the finger issue popping up, it seemed like it was never ending kind of thing. And I think just because fingers, you can't really do nothing with them. You just literally had to sit there and let it do its work. And then I was like, dang, I can't just be sitting around. I became really creative with things I could do on the mound without using my fingers and keeping my body in shape and pitching mode. I mean, it was a very, very stressful. You thought I'd never get out of the tunnel, honestly. But just my patience, sometimes getting impatient, but you know what? That was part of the whole road, and it's well-deserving right now.
Yeah. No, and again, I'm speaking for any Mariners fan. They couldn't be happier to see you get back out there. And you just feel good knowing someone's been through that much to see that pay off in that moment. As nervous as you were, everyone was very excited. Ken, you mentioned kind of doing some stuff on the mound, doing what you could without too much finger movement. Could you walk? I mean, what does that mean?
I mean, I was literally just doing like dry throws on the mound. I was doing towel work. You name it. I was doing like visualizing stuff on the mound just to keep my mental state and my physical state top tier. As when the day came, I could start playing catch. It felt like I never dropped a ball or anything like that. But yeah, it was pretty stressful. I mean, I still had to watch out how much I did, because I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm still having to keep in shape, but also I had to be cautious what I do or what I grab with my hand, because the other day fingers are an everyday necessity for us. And just even sometimes when I was rehabbing from the finger, just simply opening a car door wouldn't bother me because I can't grip as well. Mm-hmm. Or just a little movement or a little pressure really affected me. But you know what? It's at that time, like when it's feeling better, I had to push myself just a little bit, like, all right, try to open this door or try to hold my kid's hands, like kind of hold on to him. And just simple things to kind of like tell my body, hey, it's okay. Just keep going little by little. I mean, it can be a mental toll on you, but you know what? I grinded through and I just pushed myself as much as I could to come back to the field.
Now, Ken, you're a married man and I am as well. And sometimes our spouse, they take on all of our struggles and successes or whatnot. What was your wife's role in this whole comeback? And with her being a pitcher as well, do you guys share like pitching thoughts? What's that whole dynamic like?
I mean, she's my rock. I mean, she's everything to me. And her as a pitcher as well, she can relate to what I was going through. She knows that a surgery like mine was a long process because, I mean, it's my career. We had to focus on making sure I got better. And then we knew it was going to be a long road, and she was there every step of the way from me going under for the night to the day she picked me up and making sure if I was in pain, she made sure the medication was ready. Mm-hmm. She was there every step of the way until I got my brace off. And, I mean, there are times where I'm like, I was walking around the house with no brace because I was sick and tired of having a brace on, and she's literally throwing it across the room, be like, put this on now. But I'm just like, but I needed her for those moments because, like, if I wasn't going to follow the rules or just because it was uncomfortable, I mean, that could be one less thing, one step back for me recovering quicker or on time. So she made sure I stayed on point and stayed in the line of, this is what the doctor says. We were going to follow what the doctor says and what the rehab facility says. And she made it point clear, like, you do it and you do it right.
Yeah.
And I did.
That's awesome. From the 425, a listener saying, having just had screws removed from my hand this morning, totally relating to Ken's story. Yeah, I think that anything like this, obviously yours is at a very different level being a pro athlete, but that idea of the mental hurdles and obstacles of going through something, not knowing if you're going to be the same. I mean, it's scary, right? For anyone. And we all try to act tough, but like, it's I appreciate you being so candid. By the way, Ken, our producer is an Arizona alum, and he's mentioned to give your wife an honorary bear down.
Yeah, bear down, Ken. Pass that on your wife.
Yeah, if you could please let us tell him.
Bear down.
Nice.
I will. I was supposed to be a Wildcat, but I decided to sign instead. So, well, I'm technically a Wildcat, but not really.
No, once a Wildcat, welcome, always a Wildcat.
Ken, you are always welcome.
You know what, Ken? Honorary the more the bear merit. Down for you.
yeah, all right.
So now what's the deal? How do you feel about this ball club? Obviously, you guys come off a slump. It's been rough. But after a performance like last night, the vibes have to be good. You guys have to be feeling like you can pull off a couple games here.
You know what? The team is where it needs to be. It's just one of those. I think it's more of a mental hurdle for this club. I mean, yeah, sometimes things just don't go your way, but we can find ways to win ball clubs. If that's the simplest things, I think at the end of the day, it's still baseball. At the end of the day, I even tell myself, this is still the game I played since I was four. The game has not changed. You can't force things, but you can make things happen. And I think that's the biggest thing. And I think we did that last night. We weren't forcing things last night. We were just letting it happen. You know what? Make things happen. Make it tough on the other team. And the end of the day, when you have a guy like Marco doing what he did last night, you can find ways to win a ball club for a pitcher like that, doing his job or even a bullpen or just doing the little things can go a long way in the season. I think once we get to that point and like we did last night, the sky's the limit. I think we'll be just fine.
He is Mariners reliever Ken Giles on our airwaves and back in action for the Mariners. Ken, congratulations on your return. Bear down for the whole Giles family, and we appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks, Ken.
See ya. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle
My
Sports
favorite
app.
Mariner of all time.
Dude, I Ken really like that.
Up.
I really like that interview. That was very candid. I have never in 6 years of player interviews,
mm-hmm.
I can count on one hand the number of times that I felt like a player was like, oh no, yeah, I threw up before that one, or like that genuinely. Shaquille Griffin was very candid, but he was always really like kind of optimistic and in a pretty good mood, so it was never like, oh, I was terrified. Hearing Ken be like, no, I was a nervous wreck.
You got to be rooting for him, especially after the road that he took the last couple of years to get back to the field. I mean, obviously I'm a little biased because
he's a Wildcat.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's a forever Wildcat.
I mean, just that journey that he's been on. And
yeah, unreal.
Vulnerability.
Yes.
That's what it is.
I love
a lot of vulnerability in front of people he doesn't know right now. That was a really cool interview. Appreciated that one from Ken. All right, what I need to know is how we're wrapping up today. Get your questions in right now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776. Your questions, our answers. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Get your questions in now. Any question you have to the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776. Save us in your phone. You can text us all day, every day. That's also the same number you're going to use to call. Let's do this one from one listener, Bump, Stacy Curtis. Interviewing for a sales job. I've been in blue-collar jobs my whole life. So nervous. Any advice? I asked this person what they did before. They said they were a supervisor with some warehouse jobs.
Okay. Sales, personality.
Right?
Show some personality. You got to be able to connect with people and just relate. So if you got a nice smile, show that smile. If you got a go-to joke, tell that joke. Connect.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're going into sales from working a blue-collar job, you can't act like you're, you know, the foreman on the yard. Hey!
Yeah.
Get back to work.
You just got to be like, yeah, everyone at my... I was a people person.
Yeah.
I worked with a ton of people. I got my supervisor role because people would listen to me and like me.
Sales is all about connections and relationships.
Yep.
Yes.
And building on those. So make sure that you are a people person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the world is your oyster.
I will say my very best friend works in sales. And just recently... Now, she didn't work blue-collar jobs before. She's worked in sales her whole life. But... she went to a sales job with tech and engineering. It's like kind of like recruiting.
Yeah.
She was like, I've never worked in this industry in my life. She'd worked in like footwear, then she'd worked in transportation. So she was like, it's like looking at another language. But she got the job because they were like, you're so like, what we need is for people in a job, in an industry, because this was like in tech, without a lot of people to be able to translate things.
Yeah.
So yeah, just... honestly, here's the thing about working any kind of not blue-collar job. The things you care about the most are the same. Do you like the people you work with?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no?
410 with some good advice. Is they ask more questions. Don't talk. Listen.
Good advice, 410.
It's good stuff.
What I need to know, this one is for Bump. Bump, would you want to see them trade the Seahawks? Would you want to see the Seahawks trade 2 first-rounders for a higher pick to get a quarterback next season?
All depends on how the season goes. It's hard to make that decision right now. Right in, I want to see what they do at the quarterback spot. Is Drew balling? Is Baker under center? Is Jimmy here? A lot of things need to happen, but I can see that scenario going down. I can see it happening because if we talked about all the talent that they already have on this roster, right? There's pieces there. If you feel like at the end of this year, all we need is that quarterback and we're good to go, go ahead and do it, baby.
Seth in Fresno, my favorite thing about What I Need to Know when we do this segment, because we rotate between this and a couple other ones, is when other listeners answer a question for a listener. It's the
love
best.
It.
Seth in Fresno says, always remember you're selling yourself more than the product. And then the 206 says, be yourself. If you're not yourself when you get the job, you're going to hate the job.
Facts.
Solid advice, you guys.
Wisdom.
I know. All right, What I Need to Know. All the donuts in the world. Is this just the donut show? We do donut topics every day. All the donuts in the world have to be destroyed, but you can save one kind. What are you saving?
Is the cinnamon roll, does that count?
They do have those glazed cinnamon rolls.
Glazed cinnamon rolls. That's what I'm saving.
I'll allow it. That's an interesting choice.
The center of it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The middle part of a cinnamon roll is
first of all,
incredible.
The edges of the cinnamon roll are still good.
They're still good.
There's nothing that beats the center of a cinnamon roll.
Well, yeah, it's like the top of the muffin.
Yeah.
But you need the whole muffin to bite into it for the full experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going maple bar. It's not even close.
Yeah,
there is no
bar.
Close second. It's maple bar 1 through 5.
I can get with maple bar.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. What I need to know, are the Mariners buyers or sellers at the deadline?
Yes.
Yes. Curtis, would you mind explaining what you think?
Well, I think kind of along the lines of what Jeff Passan said today, if you're going to be in a position to acquire talent, whether that means giving up talent to go get it or giving up what you've got to go get it or giving up pieces in order to kind of hit the reset button, I mean, just go get talent. Whether that means buying or selling, just fill this entire organization out with tons and tons and tons of talent. Because, look, they do have the number one farm system in baseball, but clearly that hasn't been enough to turn this thing into a winning record here in 2022.
I already know the answer to this question for both of you. From the 509, will you be watching the NBA draft tomorrow?
Yes.
You already know.
Yeah, I know. I already know.
You already know.
Who do you guys think will go first?
Chet.
I think Chet as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, Chet's going to go. And I can't wait to see him after a year or two and he's like 15, 20 pounds heavier.
Instead of 140 pounds.
Yeah, because he's already nice. Tall. Wait till he can just get in the paint and just, you know, get in there. I love it.
What I need to know. Oh, someone asked me if I liked Quincy, Washington. I went there for. Have you ever been to Quincy?
No.
I went there for a wedding. I'd been to Pullman one time, but I hadn't overall been to Eastern Washington a ton. Didn't know that there were like regular windstorms. I didn't know that was a thing. Is that a thing
really?
That happens? No, I had no idea. No idea. This wedding was a very expensive wedding that had to be moved inside for multiple parts of the wedding.
How did the bride take that?
Kevin and Giselle, congratulations. They actually rolled with it.
Nice.
They totally rolled with it. Yeah, they were like, all right, we're going to the lobby. Here we go. And it was a great time.
You've been to Pullman once?
I've been to Pullman one time. I went to the Walmart and got a pumpkin pie. It was during Thanksgiving. I went to a bar that had a cougar in it on the wall.
That's like every bar.
I don't know. It had a. I know. I'm going to keep describing that. So I went to a bar in Pullman.
There
that
was
had a cougar
coug
on the wall.
Motif on the wall.
No, it was a cougar. It was like a big cougar, like a like stuffed cougar, like a taxidermy cougar.
Okay.
I think. Right. It was scary looking.
Well, this is what we got to do. For the Pac-12 Network, I'm going to be in Pullman for the game.
Me and Curtis are going.
Let's go.
Bump and Stacey Curtis road trip. Let's do it. I'm very, very excited about this. What I need to know, last question here. If the Mariners are sellers, who goes?
That's Rogers. I'm not touching
Rogers.
I think at the very top of the list would be like Paul Sewald, Mitch Haniger, those guys. I would hate to see
it.
I
don't like it.
So don't become sellers.
So don't become sellers.
Start winning. You don't have to worry about becoming sellers.
That's exactly right. All right. This has been Bumpin' Stacey for Michael Bumpus, Curtis Rogers. I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming up next.